Thank you for joining us for this episode of Journey Now, produced by Journey Church in Brentwood, Tennessee. For more information on Journey Church and our gatherings, visit journeytn.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to Journey Now podcast. This is Monday, and on Mondays we get to talk to all sorts of fun people from the Journey community about big questions, doubts, things we're wrestling with. The goal of Mondays is just to give people permission, because in the Bible, the opposite of faith isn't doubt. The opposite of faith is sight, trusting in only what you can see. And so in the scriptures, there's plenty of room for people to wrestle and wonder and question. And so it's been fun as we've been examining different statements that people think Christians believe. And some of us do believe these things. But I'm operating from a list of so-called toxic beliefs put together by a non-Christian person who observes the Christian community and what he hears taught and says, man, this seems really off. So our statement today is God is in control of all things. So that's the statement we want to wrestle with a little bit. And to do that, I want to introduce you to my conversation partner for the day, Jay Hall. Jay, hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Jay is a music producer. Jay has some amazing tattoos. Jay just survived COVID. And Jay is a good-looking bald man. And so...
Bald thus, is beautiful.
Thus qualified. Jay, tell us a little bit about how you grew up. What was your faith inheritance, if you had any? Were you a church? Were you raised in a church family? I mean, what was all of that like?
So I was born in Michigan to two parents that did all their growing up in Detroit. Mm. When I was 2 years old, my family moved to Kansas City. So I've spent, I wasn't born in Kansas City, but I mean, might as well have been. I spent a significant portion of my life there. In my early 30s, I moved to Nashville. Hmm. And I've been here for 11 years. So for me, as it relates to theology and, church, Christianity, my childhood was filled with actually just like two churches. We went to a Baptist church in Kansas City until I was maybe eighth grade. I'd have to really think about that, but I'm almost positive it was pre-high school that we then moved. My parents switched churches and we went to a Covenant church, which is a more northern denomination. I don't really know a ton about the history of Covenant. I did for a while when we were there, but I can't remember any of that. Then in my teen years, I bailed, which we might end up touching on in this podcast. But then in my early 20s, my girlfriend at the time, who I ended up marrying, we are high school sweethearts. And it took her a while to pick away at this, but in my early 20s, I agreed to go back to church. So we went back to the Covenant church that, I'd spent my high school years at. Then, Sarah and I moved to a very small non-denominational community in Kansas City called Redemption Church. And we were there until we moved to Nashville. And from there we went to a church that was kind of a bad vibe, and we found Journey pretty quickly.
What was it that pulled you away initially in your 20s? And what was it that kind of piqued your interest back?
Okay. So when I was 16, the Covenant Church, the youth pastor left. He just took a different job that, he felt was a better fit for him, crossed the country at a different church. So they went through this was my first experience through what I now know to be just the chaos of church is hiring staff members. You can relate to that. You just went through it recently. The person that was identified as the best fit had just recently, his wife had at this time, his wife had recently left him, like kind of like an overnight, you know, I'm not into this anymore, moved out, like left him no options, no agreement for reconciliation or anything.
Yeah.
That was what we were told. And then it turned into this massive like political event in our church that like you can't hire someone that's been divorced. And I just saw it, just I couldn't add the whole equation up. It would have made a little more sense to me, the reaction as a teenager. It would have made more sense to me if the story was that, you know, that marriage falling apart was on him. But at least the story that he gave everybody that seemed to be true, you know, was he just got stuck in a bad situation and was trying to pick up the pieces. So that just left a really bad taste in my mouth, how that community handled it. I mean, there was a lot of like ugly things said to, you know, the people that didn't want to hire him because of that. And then the people that did, it was like a, you know, it was a pretty big divide. And as a 16-year-old kid who was already an anti-establishment, you know, I'm not a big fan of authority. I don't like people telling me what I can and can't do. That just kind of ruined the ride. And the way I saw it at the time, and I remember talking to my parents about it, because they were getting pretty mad at me for not showing up. I mean, when you're 16, you can drive yourself. And my parents had a kind of a household that right around that time, like a significant amount of freedom was opened up, you know, to, and that was one of them. They're like, well, if you don't want to show up, that's on you. We're just really disappointed. And so it got kind of ugly between my parents and I, and I just kept saying the same thing over and over. I'm like, if this is how humans decide to behave and something that, you know, it's something that should be a lot larger and more beautiful and something, and in one particular event that just seems really simple, like if this is how humans want to do it, then I don't want to be part of it. So I bailed for 8-ish years, 7 years. And I very, very, very slowly stepped back into it.
Understand that. When did you begin to question as you step back in? Maybe you'd always had some of these big questions, but as you step back into it, when did you start wrestling with some of the theology that you'd inherited from the two churches in Kansas City?
It definitely in my teenage years. I'm the type of person that asks lots of questions regardless of the comfort level of anybody that might, you know, be hearing the question.
Got it.
That's never been something that's given me any pause or hesitation to ask questions. And I really enjoy challenging systems, not in like a menacing way. I like to understand things, and the only way I know how to understand things is to ask about them. So over the years, I've become very good at devil's advocate. Again, not menacing, but, you know, if you had an opinion or a belief that I just didn't understand, or I didn't know a lot about it, I will quickly take up the other side, not to make you argue or angry, but just asking simple questions to tease out more understanding, you know, less about, you know, prove to me you're right. It comes from an energy of like, I love learning. So it tends to come more from an energy of like, oh, I don't know much about that, so I'm going to ask other side-based questions and I'm just going to learn.
Yeah.
So I've always been like that.
Yeah.
But definitely in my teen years, 14, 15 and on, I definitely started asking lots of more theological based questions of like, like, why do we do this? Or you know, just that like simple kind of teenage stuff. Like, this doesn't make sense to me. Like, what?
Right.
And being someone that doesn't like rules. And in, you know, what I found in
I'm seeing a theme.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, being a teenager that doesn't like rules and doesn't like authority, you know, youth group in most church systems I've been a part of is definitely rule based, you know, trying to keep teenagers from making horrible decisions. And but I wasn't, I just didn't like that.
When did you begin to have questions about this idea of God's will? Like, God's in control of everything. What is it about that statement that draws your questions and thoughts?
I would say preteen, I probably just decided that that wasn't something that mattered to me.
Which didn't matter?
Well, I'm trying to use like more immature language now, since we're we're staying in my story in a middle school timeline.
Got it.
I mean, I've got so many more developed thoughts about this particular topic now. So I'm trying not to attach any sort of maturity to middle school J. But I mean, I do have some memories of just not really caring or even giving much thought to people that were, that had an agenda, agenda strong, that had a teaching or a conversation of God is in control of all things, which then it just always, it just, when people come from that vantage point, it takes very little time for it to worm its way into the micro. And the micro is that God, like, God is in control of your life, and God is in control of the minutiae of things that are around you and surrounding you and things you're participating in. And it doesn't take very much time for someone who believes that and wants to come to you from that vantage point. It's seconds that they just worm right into the, to the past the micro down into the nano. And that's where the, that's the core of the onion for me. That's like the epicenter of my problem. And because, you know, because of the person that I am with all of my authority issues and all of that, I just start asking all those questions. And then I just start saying things like, that's ridiculous. Like, it just doesn't, you can't build an equation that that is, that that's the outcome to. So,
what do you see as harmful about that belief?
In the nano, micro, or macro, where do you want to go first?
Love it all. I want to go all, but let's start let's start with the nano.
Okay, I would say, so let's define the nano as a single person's surroundings, environment, and personal decision making. Yeah. That'll be the nano.
Okay.
And then we'll define the micro as a small community. Let's just say, let's just say 50 people or less.
Okay.
You know, like maybe even keep the micro in, you know, just your immediate circle, small group, neighborhood. If you're someone who engages in like actually knowing and meeting your neighbors, we'll say that that's the micro. And then the macro would be, the church body and all parts beyond.
Okay. Sounds good.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. So we'll start in the nano and then keep zooming out. Here's my problem in the nano. When you believe that God is in control of all things, like, and you believe it all the way down into the nano, I've seen people get absolutely paralyzed with things that they like, that, that they really truly want to experience and do in their lives. So here's my, here's a super quick example. Okay. God is in control of all things. I'm working, in this cubicle job that I hate, and all of my passion and desire is to be an interior decorator. I just need God to show me, like, I need God to lead me to that. Now Jay hears that and says to that person in a more sensitive way than I'm about to say, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. You know, if you want to be an interior decorator, you need to chart a course to it. And in faith and, you know, prayer or, you know, whatever your spiritual disciplines are, God will bless that. Cause if you love it, he loves it.
Yeah.
Right. So that's where my mind lands in the nano. And like, and so you can extrapolate that into like all kinds of details. I've heard people say crazy things to me, like, oh, my laptop's acting funny. I really need, like, I need some prayers for a new laptop and just really hope that God will, like, you know, make that a possibility for me. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, I just, if you need a new laptop, then you need to save some money and figure out the budget and go buy it. God's not going to deliver it to your doorstep like Amazon.
Yeah. So it's with the nano, it can really breed passivity and kind of this resignation to
faith. I've seen, in my life, I've, that's a really great way to say it, that I've seen that over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've heard some of the craziest things for prayer requests and life journey and career decisions, even marrying somebody. I mean, I've heard all of it relate to language that revolves around God is in control of all things. So I just need to wait for God.
Yeah.
I just don't believe that in the nano, you know, I mean, I'm a firm, heavy believer in free will. And I, like, you just can't build, I've not been able to hear or do on my own an argument that moves against free will, that we're all just sitting around waiting for God to do something in our lives so we can then, you know, be motivated to, or just feel empowered.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, God did it. Finally, I got the job I wanted.
Right.
Because God went to the interview and got it for me.
How do you see this playing at the micro level?
Okay, at the micro level, let me think about it for a second. So micro is our immediate community, friends, small groups. Mm-hmm. So the nano stuff gets sucked up into it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of a way that it pushes the opposite direction. I know there's examples.
Oh, that's all right. You want to go macro first and then back up?
My brain just went so far into the nano. I just,
I
mean, I think it's easy to hit the next two. I mean, the micro would be a community that is led and settles into these beliefs that then, for the members that would question it, they would get pushed out.
Yeah.
Not even necessarily from the community, but the questions get pushed out. To me, that's a danger zone when, you know, if you're sitting in a small group and you're the only person that would be like me that would say, well, what about free will? Or,
right.
You know, I mean, oh, okay. All right. I do have an example. One of my lifelong closest friends, when we were in our late 20s, we played in crap loads of bands together, lived a lot of life together, toured. Traveled together, blah, blah, blah. He grew up Catholic, went to Catholic school, and is now an atheist and has been for decades and quite possibly leads a more Christian life than most Christians I know. Very, very, very intelligent guy. One day in passing, hanging out, having a beer, he just said, Jesus don't care about your jump shot. And
sounds like
the
song.
I just kind of laughed and looked at him and I said, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, explain that to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said, he's like, you know, I get really tired. Cause he's a huge college basketball fan.
Mm.
He's like, I just get really tired of like watching the post game interviews. And it's like over and over and over and over they interview the winning team and the key star players on the winning team over and over just say, you know, like, hey, what, you know, question, how did you, like, what'd you do out on the floor tonight that just, you know, led your team to a victory? And the answer is, well, I just want to thank God for having me rain those threes in, you know, or I just, Jesus was out there with me on the court. And so my friend Chris just, you know, he's explaining this concept to me and he just looks at me and he's like, so you're telling me, so this is an atheist,
right?
He's like, so you're telling me that Jesus actively was against the other team. He only cared about your 3-point shot.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't care about anybody else out there. Like, you only won because God was in control of your game.
Right.
God was in favor of your game and not anybody else out on the court or, you know, any of the passion of the fans. So that's probably,
yeah,
that's probably a decent example of the micro. So you have, you know, five against five basketball, and God is only in control of the one side.
Right.
Like, well, I don't think so. Like, I don't have to work very hard to disprove that.
And then it's really easy to translate to the macro, right? Our church is the favored church. Because what I hear you saying is this idea that God is in control of everything means that he has some will, that if I'm in it, I'm untouchable. But if I'm not, I've missed it entirely, right? That there is...
So you're touching on dualism, which is another thing that I really can't stand. So, I think you're absolutely right. I think that the Western Christian Church has done a fantastic job creating these dualistic systems that keep them being right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is probably, you know, God is in control of all things. This is probably on my short list. Don't ask me to give you the list because I'd have to really sit down and write it out. But this definitely would be one thing on my short list that is really dangerous. And that maybe, like, I'm not trying to be shocky or fantastical, but to me, the danger is it creates individual and, you know, micro, like small pockets of your community. It creates complacency in like scary areas where people get paralyzed thinking that they have to wait, you know, for some message or some action of God to do simple things.
Right.
Even simple things that are profound. Like, this is the place where I think it's dangerous. Like simple things like love your neighbor, you know, do you know your neighbors? Do you know that your neighbor just lost his job or her job? Do you know that, you know, there's a single mom living next to you that just lost their job, and just a bag of groceries, you know, anonymously set on the porch could just completely change somebody's, you know, mental health and survival.
Yeah.
And that's a simple thing that then has a profound impact as it adds up.
Right.
And if you're coming from a place and teaching these dualistic systems, so like to explain that, it's like dualism is us against them, me or you, this or that. There's only two options. Well, humans, brain science, that's how we're programmed from the beginning. It's a very core, like, survival mechanism, right? Like, put my hand in the fire, get burned. Don't put my hand in the fire, don't get burned. Like, it's just as simple as that. Well, we've evolved way past that, but we're still stuck with this dualistic way of thinking. We really need to start breaking outside of that. We've got to start adding, if anything, just a third option. So if God is in control, in the Christian church, especially the Western Christian church, it's a, you know, there's only one other place to go with it. Well, if you're not a Christian and you don't subscribe to this, then you're just completely out of control and you're lost.
Mm.
You're like, well, it's not that simple.
Mm. So,
go ahead.
That thinking feeds into that dualism, us versus them. We're right and have God on our side. Totally. No, I totally get that. How do you think we should conceive then of God's relationship to his creation? If it's not control, how should we think of that?
What a good question.
You know?
Okay.
Because I think we'd both say, right, he still relates to the world in some way.
Okay.
He's still trustworthy or whatever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if we're going to stay in the context of our topic, I would come at it this way. If I were teaching it, which I guess I am on this podcast, or at least kind of brain dumping,
totally.
I would say it like this. I would say that, and this is kind of currently where I am and something that I've been working on for about 2 years.
Hmm.
So there's a whole bunch of stuff that leads up to this, but I would start with this. The world at all times is paradoxical and complementary. And until we as individual and collective communal human beings can learn to sit right in the middle of that tension, then we're never going to get it. So I'll break it down really quick and then I'll put it right into the topic. So the world is at all times a paradox, right? Human trafficking doesn't make any sense. You can't break it down. It should, like, I'm mad about it. We all should be mad about it, but it exists. It goes against everything that any sort of moral, ethical belief system should be a before. And, but yet here it is, right? It's a paradox. You can't resolve it. Like, why, you know, humans are being trafficked still in the, you know, 2021. But at the same time, like literally at the same time, the world is complementary. Here you and I are on a podcast. We've just met and we have a similar goal and we're moving in a similar direction and we're complementing each other and we're trying to make good decisions and be good people and benefit our community. So while human trafficking is happening and we're like upset and sad and mad about it, at the same time, here we are putting like putting ourselves together and creating complementary systems, right? This is all happening at the same time.
Right.
So until you learn how to sit in the tension, which I'm not sure we can actually learn to do it full time, but until you learn to sit in the tension of that, I think that we miss the biggest part of the story. So now to place it in the God is in control. Yeah. Man, I fully plan when I meet Jesus, God, whatever the divine, whatever that system looks like post-life, I fully plan to ask like, what the hell with human trafficking? Mm-hmm. Like tell me like, why that? Mm-hmm. But then you have to, that goes right to control. If God is in control of all things, like why does he allow that? Mm-hmm. Why does he allow this and not this? And why this and not this? So I don't have to work very hard to say in the beginning, all like literally beginning, blackness, nothing. All God said was go, right? So let's just think of this as a metaphor. So God says go and boom, everything explodes out. So let's, for our sciencey people, we'll call it the Big Bang. Right? So God says, go, whispers, shouts, whatever. And like massive explosion of everything. Everything comes into being. Now, like from a science perspective, we know like multiple galaxies, universes, stars, all this stuff. It's all made, it's all formed. But at the same time here in our world, an evil took place. But God didn't say stop to that. He allowed it. He didn't cease anything. He said, go. And then this other thing happened and he continued to let it go.
Yeah.
So right out of the creation story, you can say God chose not to be in control. He chose to let free will and decision-making all happen. Mm-hmm. We're not on our own in this scary sort of like, oh yeah, God checked out. He's, you know, in some other galaxy. Maybe someday we'll get there. And like, you know, he's not even checking in. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is we have a very engaged, real God that's with us, but is not in, not like keeping his hand in this motion that we're just robots.
Right.
No, in our world. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, that's Genesis 1 and 2, right? I mean, he comes as king. And then he delegates real authority to the image bearers that he calls,
which is all of us.
Right, exactly. That's the job of human beings, not just Christian beings, human beings.
We're human beings, we're not human doings.
Oh man, someone's preaching right now. Okay. For the sake of time, I'm gonna wrap us up. Although I have no doubt we could go on for much longer. Yeah. Absolutely.
Totally.
But I think there are some good things to reflect on in terms of the idea of punting to God's just in control of it. Things I've heard from you are things like, well, does that mean God is in control of murders and rapes and trafficking? Really, do we want to say that? Secondly, it can breed passivity among people as they're paralyzed with, well, okay, then I guess I just must wait for God, even though God has given us clear guidance on what to do in most circumstances already. And then there seems to be a sense where if God is in control, that means I get to stay in control too. This can be used, almost weaponized as, and I've heard this, hey, it's, you know, I've heard church leaders say, it's God's will, we do this. And you're like, really? You sure about that? Or did you just think it was a great idea?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
And who can argue if it's God's will? You know, who can stand up and say, well, I don't. So I think we're right to be suspicious that maybe that isn't the best way to understand how God relates to the world. Jay Hall, man, so fun to see you and get to know you a little bit. Appreciate your time today. And for all of you tuning in, we have podcasts every day of the week. And I invite you to like, subscribe, rate, share, whatever else you do with podcasts. And we're grateful for your time. And thanks for letting us play a small part in your day. Till next time, friends.
If you enjoyed today's episode, we would love it if you would share a screenshot of this episode to your Instagram story and tag us at @journey_TN. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcasting app.